Of the resurgence of the Daft on Draft podcast. I think this is the 20th episode overall, if you want to go all the way back to a past year. But this is the second episode since I relaunched for the first time in a year. And I'm excited to be back. Thank you for listening to that first episode. To those who did, if not, go back and listen to that first episode. Go to Apple, Spotify, review, subscribe, do what you got to do. Again, I'm your host, Corey Kinnon, Fake Corey Kinnon on Twitter. You can find me at sportsillustrated.com's draft site through Fan Nation there. That's where my draft content will be. I also have my Substack where most of my quarterback charting data will be found as well. Not a lot of draft content for me last year with the birth of my daughter. Very excited to be back in the space, jumping back in. Today is also the start of my scouting series, What to Watch For When Watching Exposition. You know, it's more of an in-depth, I would call it maybe like a 201 course of these positions, of what to watch for when you're trying to scout a quarterback, when you're trying to scout a running back, a tight end, wide receiver, kind of more nitty gritty, traitsy kind of things to watch for. And we're starting with quarterbacks. And in this conversation today, I have Derek Klassen of Reception Perception 33rd Team, does a lot of really great work surrounding quarterbacks, charting quarterbacks, really knows what he's watching. In terms of what translates to the NFL from the college level and what makes the best NFL quarterbacks the best for a reason. So I'm really excited for that conversation, for you guys to hear that conversation that I had with Derek. And so that's really going to kick off this scouting series. But before we get to that conversation, you know, we'd be remiss not to talk about the 2024 draft at all, right? It's in the rearview mirror now. We are 2 weeks in the past from the 2024 NFL draft. And so over the next few episodes, I'm going to take some time to break down what I think are some of the best value picks, some of the best scheme fits, day three players that can contribute right away, those sorts of things on the first part of these episodes before we get to the scouting conversations. And I'm going to try my best to maybe give a brief breakdown of the position that we're actually talking about in the scouting series and using an opportunity to talk about those players drafted in the 2024 NFL draft as well. So with Derek, talking about quarterbacks, we have to talk about quarterbacks, right? So just breaking down this class, again, I released my quarterback rankings on my Substack. This was before I started back up with SI Draft as well. You can check out my in-depth quarterback rankings on my Substack, Daft on Draft. And it's a bit different than the order that the quarterbacks went, especially, you know, the one that went fifth round, Spencer Rattler. I had well above what consensus had. I know Derek did, who we're going to talk to today as well. He ended up going fifth round at the Saints. And I think that's a pretty good landing spot for him in terms of the talent on that roster and potentially his ability to take over that room and then maybe start some games. I don't know if it's a great spot for him in terms of I think he'll probably be looking at a different head coach next year. And I think he'll probably be looking at a different offensive coordinator and maybe an entirely different offensive system next year, which is not great for any fifth round quarterback. Like, you don't bank on fifth round quarterbacks to begin with. So I think Spencer Rattler still has immense talent. Everything that I've heard from scouts at the combine, I've read from insiders, is that his maturity issues aren't really there anymore, that he did kind of learn from the things that happened at Oklahoma. But they do consider what happened on QB1, where he kind of is demeaning his teammate, ridiculing his teammate as an 18-year-old having a camera in front of his face. So I think the talent is there. And to the point where I even had Spencer Rattler ranked as the fourth best quarterback in this class. So we're talking the top three quarterbacks. We're talking Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May. I thought he was better. His tape was better than J.J. McCarthy. I get J.J. McCarthy is much younger. J.J. McCarthy has the ability to have a little bit of a longer runway than a guy like Spencer Rattler might, right? But in terms of what he put on tape behind maybe the worst offensive line in the NFL, really throwing to only one NFL talent in Xavier Leggett, who was drafted 32nd overall by the Panthers, I think I think that Spencer Rattler showed immense growth from his time at Oklahoma, really improved his pocket presence, still has the immense arm talent. Like, he throws the ball the way that Drake May and Caleb Williams do, right? They're the only two that might have more arm talent in this class than Spencer Rattler. So I'm bullish on Rattler. You know, I can't say that I'm going to sit here and bank my reputation on a fifth-round quarterback who might never get an opportunity to start. But in terms of projecting him from the college level to the NFL, I think he does a lot of things pretty well. In terms of his deep ball accuracy, he's got the best deep ball accuracy in class. So we'll see what happens there. But I think that's enough time spent, again, on a fifth-round quarterback who may never see the opportunity to see the field. I think when we talk about this quarterback class, we have to talk about Jaden Daniels being taken over Drake May. I think that's my biggest discrepancy. I think Drake May is the best quarterback in this class. Just what it is. Again, I chart quarterbacks. I have a weighted on target percentage metric that I've created and refined. And, you know, I think Drake May had the highest number. Now, I know Drake May had the highest weighted on target percentage of any quarterback over the past three drafts. So I'm bullish on Drake May. I'm bullish on his fit with Alex Van Pelt in New England, assuming Alex Van Pelt does some of the same stuff that Kevin Stefanski did in Cleveland when he was the offensive coordinator in Cleveland for the past four seasons. Like, look at what Joe Flacco did in Cleveland, down the field, off of play action, off of different run action looks that they were able to manipulate defenses because they have a diverse run game, those sorts of things. That might be a pretty darn good fit for Drake May. If you think about it, I also do think he's a darn good athlete to make plays with his feet as well. So I'm bullish on Drake May. My quarterback one stunned Washington went with Jaden Daniels over him, who's one a good bit older, a late bloomer. Yes, he won the Heisman, but again, if we're talking about the talent surrounding him, Drake May played behind a pretty bad offensive line with his best receiver being a fourth round pick this year in Tez Walker. And we're talking about Jaden Daniels, who played behind two future first-round picks at offensive tackles, two first-round picks at wide receiver. And so that's where I remain a little bit skeptical of his transition to the NFL. He's a great athlete. I don't think the arm talent is top tier. It's top shelf, right? So when we're talking about the arm talent, and again, when we talk to Derek, he does a really good job of defining what he believes arm talent is. We're talking about his arm talent. Like, the velocity is not there. His accuracy is great, especially down the field, but he doesn't always have the arm to get it there. He doesn't have the arm to drive the football into tight windows. I also don't have a great deal of respect for Cliff Kingsbury, who's going to be his offensive coordinator. Just an iffy pick all around for me. Again, respect what he did at the college level. He was a lot of fun to watch, but when we're talking about traits, tools, projection to the NFL, I don't know if anybody has it better than Drake May. And that includes Caleb Williams. Again, Caleb Williams is a top 10 worthy prospect. Caleb Williams is a great quarterback prospect. I just personally thought Drake May is better, right? But we're talking about Caleb Williams, the ability to improvise, to throw off platform from multiple arm slots, to generate velocity on those throws, to drive the ball into tight windows. There's a lot to like about Caleb Williams. Again, with all of these quarterbacks, their transition to an NFL offense from the offense they were playing in, you know, I think probably Jaden Daniels has the shortest runway. But again, what LSU's doing, he's throwing a lot of slot fades, a lot of verticals to neighbors, to Brian Thomas, right? These talents that he has, a lot of leaks to his tight end. So I don't know if he's going to be doing a lot of the same stuff with Cliff Kingsbury, but we haven't seen a lot of success from a Kingsbury just raid style, pure raid style offense in the NFL. We just haven't. So, that'll be really interesting. But again, going back to Caleb Williams, the Bears did a great job of putting him in the best position to succeed right away. An excellent job. You can say, well, why didn't they do that for Justin Fields? And that's a pretty common argument, right? But I do think that Caleb Williams is a better quarterback than Justin Fields. You're resetting that rookie contract clock. And with Fields, like, we have to understand it's like, yes, was he in the best situation? No, but are there some things that, like, are his fault and his to own? And absolutely, like, he does not see the field as well as he needs to or as fast as he needs to. I think he's safe with the football, but you'll hear Derek talk about this really well. He's safe with the football, but that doesn't always mean that he knows what he's seeing. So, yeah. Caleb's in the best spot. Shane Waldron, look what Shane has done, his body of work with Geno Smith, with Russell Wilson, what Russell Wilson did after he left Seattle comparatively as well. What he got out of those wide receivers as well in Seattle, the concepts he was able to get DK Metcalf, to get Tyler Lockett open, to get Jaxon Smith-Njigba incorporated as well. Caleb Williams has DJ Moore. He has Romo Odunze and he has Keenan Allen now. So there's a lot of reasons to be bullish about that Chicago offense. Maybe not their offensive line so much. Yeah, they got Darnell Wright, their first round pick last year, but they drafted Amagaji, the kid from Yale, in the third round to play left tackle. We'll see if he starts right away, if they stick with Braxton Jones for a little bit, if Amagaji plays guard for him. We'll kind of see what happens there. But I think Caleb is in the best potential situation. For one, I do think that Waldron's passing concepts will cater to what Caleb wants to do, and that's sling the football deep down the field, right? So not only that, but he will have a diverse run game that Waldron has been very good at over his time as an offensive coordinator, as a play caller as well, to kind of play off of as well, which he did not have at USC. That USC offense, man, Lincoln Riley's kind of exposed himself a little bit over the past 2 years for a lack of things they've been able to do offensively with Caleb Williams specifically. So I do think he is in a great situation to succeed right away. And I mean, he was the surefire number one overall pick. Everybody knew it. Even if I knew Drake, or if I think Drake May is the better quarterback overall, like, there's a difference between a big board and a mock draft, right? So yeah, I think that's what I've got on those big three, plus a little bit of dialogue on Rattler there. The other three we need to talk about are the three I'm not quite bullish on their transition to the NFL, right? Starting off with Michael Penix Jr., who, against all odds, went 9th overall. I had a third round grade on Michael Penix Jr. I do not think his accuracy is what people said it was, and I think a lot had to do with the adjustments that Romo Odunze, Jalen McMillan, Jalen Polk were able to make on the football when he is throwing the football down the field. I don't like a lot of his leverage throws. Again, we'll talk about leverage throws with Derek a little bit, but when you're trying to place a football, are you leveraging away from coverage? Are you hitting the shoulder furthest away from coverage of that wide receiver, or are you kind of making that wide receiver fight through a defender a little bit? Don't love that. Again, what Washington did offensively, I don't know if it's going to translate well to what Zach Robinson wants to do. And I think the most important talking point here is he's almost 24 years old, and he's not going to start for at least 3 years. So the Atlanta Falcons, who in their minds opened up a championship window by signing Kirk Cousins, you sign an established quarterback, you play in the NFC South, which is the worst division in football, right? The worst division in football. You're saying we're ready to compete. So you have a top 10 pick, 3 year window, and you use a top 10 pick on a player that's not going to contribute in that 3 year window, barring an injury to the $180 million investment you just made. I don't get it. I don't think his game translates. Penix's game translates well to the next level. And I specifically don't get that pick for Atlanta. You've seen a lot of justification for it come out after the draft. Like, oh, I've thought about it and I actually think, no, it's not a good pick. It's not a good pick for value of the player that they took. Again, I think Michael Penix was a day two quarterback. And again, quarterbacks always carry that quarterback tax, right? For the position they play, they always get elevated because of the position they play in the draft. But top 10 for Michael Penix Jr., who by all accounts I had as my quarterback 7, I believe. So I might have above Bo Nix, who might as well talk about him next. Okay. Like, I get Denver felt like they needed a quarterback and they're the 6th team to pick a quarterback, but you also picked an older quarterback who was a late bloomer. And not only that, I still think Penix hasn't hit his ceiling. Like, I think there's room for Penix to grow, right? Because he can spin the football. He can generate some velocity on the football. He does have some tools to work with. I think Bo Nix is firmly at his ceiling. I don't know how much room he has to grow. He did not look well at Auburn, and then he looked good at Oregon because he, for all accounts, is throwing the shortest depth of target of any quarterback in this class or last year's class. Throwing a lot of sticks, throwing a lot of screens, like just RPO ripping it. Like that's it. And that's not really translatable to what Sean Payton's going to do offensively. Not a quarterback I would have taken in the first round. Again, similar to Penix, I had a third round grade on Bo Nix. Not a quarterback I would have taken in the top 15. Traditionally, you're lucky to get two good quarterbacks out of a quarterback class. When's the last time a quarterback class has produced six good quarterbacks? When's the last time the sixth quarterback hasn't come off the board before the third round? It felt like a desperate play for Denver. I get it. George Payton is going to get fired if the Broncos don't do something well this year. Sean Payton's not going to get fired. And so that's why I felt like, well, you're trading away all of these assets. Jerry Jeudy, Cortland Sutton's about to get traded. You didn't draft a wide receiver until the third, fourth round in Troy Franklin. Bo Nix doesn't really need to throw to. Garrett Bowles is under contract for one more year, but that offensive line is not really in a great place. They've got Quinn Miners, but like, offensive line's not a great place. And then you're picking a quarterback who, how much better can he get? How much better can he get? So this could be a Mac Jones situation where he might play the best of any quarterback early in their career, but like, that's as good as it's going to get. So when we look at Mac Jones, what he did as a Patriot, as a rookie, we're like, oh my God, we all severely underrated Mac Jones. Well, no, like he's doing the same stuff he does at Alabama, but like what you see is what you're going to get with Mac Jones. He wasn't throwing the football more than 20 yards down the field. You know, he's a smart processor. He's getting the ball out quick, but it wasn't anything that's like, yeah, this is breathtaking, but he was running that offense and doing what was asked of him. And then you see when teams start to catch on to that, well, can Mac Jones improvise? No. Can Mac Jones create outside of structure? No. Can Mac Jones drive the football into tight windows when opposing defenses know, like, well, we just got to bump and run and we got to press? No. So that's when the wheels fell over the past 2 years for Mac Jones. So I feel like it's, and we might see a similar situation with Bo Nix where he might have some success early and we're going to overreact to it, and then it's going to come back down to earth at some point. So very, very interesting. And then we got to talk about JJ McCarthy going to the Vikings. I had an inkling, and I tweeted this out before the draft, like, Chargers sitting at 5, Cardinals sitting at 4. I really don't think teams are going to be as willing to make phone calls and trade up with them as all the hype we got, like, oh no, we're going to see 4 quarterbacks taken in 4 picks. Outside of those top 3, Williams, Daniels, May, I didn't think anybody was trading up significant assets to get a JJ McCarthy, a Michael Penix, or a Bo Nix. And they didn't, right? They didn't. The Vikings traded up one spot to get JJ McCarthy. He fell to the 10th overall pick. And I think Vikings probably didn't have to. I think they felt desperate to. Like, well, maybe the Jets are boxing us out here. What if the Jets trade this pick to the Broncos and the Broncos come up, right? So, you know, they probably felt boxed out. Like, well, we need to make this move up because the Broncos are picking 12, right? So, but they didn't give up a whole lot to get JJ McCarthy. And I think that's probably the smartest play from where their perspective. I mean, I don't think Kwesi, their GM, has done a great job in terms of trade value, getting the most out of those trades. He's kind of building a reputation of a guy that teams know they can squeeze an extra pick out of or move it like an extra round pick out of. So it's not great to build that reputation. But at the end of the day, if you think you're getting your franchise quarterback, you go get your franchise quarterback. And that can be said about Atlanta. That can be said about Denver with Penix and Nix even. Even if I don't like the pick personally, like if Denver really has the conviction that they think that Bo Nix is their guy for the future, then do it. It's the most important position in professional sports. Again, if I think it's dumb, like you're picking a sixth quarterback, like when has a quarterback class ever produced 6 good quarterbacks? Like that's fine. But like, if you have that enough conviction, do it, whatever. But with JJ, I do like that he's 21, man. I do like that you don't have to start him right away. They're paying Sam Darnold $10 million a year. Follow the money. JJ McCarthy's, unless it goes terribly, which it's Sam Darnold, and he has no track record to prove that he deserved a $10 million contract, right? So, like, unless it goes terribly, which it could, like, bottom out terribly, I don't think JJ McCarthy's going to see the field this year. So you give him an opportunity to learn from Kevin O'Connell, from Sam Darnold, I guess, whatever he can learn from Sam Darnold, to kind of see the things that he didn't do well at Michigan. Again, that wasn't an offense that relied on him. Michigan didn't win a game because of JJ McCarthy, right? So But I think the tools are there. The arm talent is definitely there. He can throw with a ton of velocity, needs to learn to throw with some touch. But again, if we're talking about translating to an NFL offense, maybe he's the closest one. But even then, they're running heavy personnel, tons of gap power, like play action off of gap power. So like, yeah, the Vikings are going to do some of that same stuff, right? So, but again, how much can you put on his plate early on? He didn't have a whole lot on his plate his entire college career. Yeah, he lost one college game. I don't know if that's, I mean, that's kind of box score scouting. It's kind of QB wins. It's something I don't really subscribe to, but I do like McCarthy's arm. I do like his ability to throw off of platform, to create outside of structure every once in a while. I wish I saw him do a little bit more within the structure of the play, right? He has some good numbers on third and long. I think that's promising data, right? But in terms of accuracy, I think a lot of it has to do with his feet, which is coachable. Again, we'll talk with Derek. What's coachable? What's not? Really good conversation. I'm thrilled for you guys to hear it. But some of his feet stuff, pretty coachable. Again, like he can't throw to his left. Yeah, because he's swinging his gate wide open. The deep ball accuracy is very concerning. Deep ball accuracy is very concerning to me. It was the worst in the class that I charted. So we'll see if some foot stuff does just fix that as well. But there's no doubt in my mind he can drive the football. He can throw the football hard. But when he is forced to push the ball outside the numbers and down the field, can he put the ball where it needs to be? And then more importantly, when he needs to layer a throw, when he needs to put the ball over a defender or needs to take a couple months, throw a changeup, can he throw the changeup instead of just throwing fastballs, four seamers, every time he's throwing the football, right? So those are some things that, some reasons for optimism, some reasons for, I'm a little skeptical. Overall, if I had to put my name on two quarterbacks, I'd do Drake May and Caleb Williams. Again, it's rare to get more than two quarterbacks out of a quarterback class that are going to succeed long term. Just look at the quarterbacks who are playing in the NFL. It's pretty diverse in terms of draft class. So if I had to bank on two, I would say May and Williams. But that's just kind of my synopsis, my rundown on the quarterbacks, why I like the pick, why I don't like the pick, what I think they bring to the NFL level, how I think they translate. But now we're going to cap this episode off. I'm not going to run us back in and give a conclusion. So we'll just end the episode whenever we're done talking to Derek. But now we're gonna go have that conversation with Derek Klassen about what to watch for when we are watching quarterbacks from a draft pick perspective. If we are, you know, scouting or trying to get into scouting or want to create NFL draft content, right? So just an important conversation of when we are watching a quarterback, how do we evaluate a quarterback? So let's turn to that conversation now. And again, not coming back on. So thanks for listening. And this is the second episode since I've returned of the Dapped on Draft podcast. All right. So diving back in the first edition of our what to look for when watching scouting series, we're going to talk quarterbacks. Why not start with quarterbacks? The most important position in professional sports. So, but it's also kind of the most volatile, most dicey to kind of evaluate. There's a lot of different people who see a lot of different things. So I'm bringing on Derek Klassen at QB Class on Twitter to break it down with me. Derek is somebody that I've been able to talk to at the combine a few times. Just, you know, I've been able to shoot him a DM every once in a while with questions that he's been very receptive to. So I wanted to bring Derek on to kind of give his thoughts on quarterbacks as well. So Derek, welcome to the Dapped on Draft podcast.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. It's very nice to do a show like this where it's kind of more like abstract conversation as opposed to diving into the 800th iteration of a scouting report I'm giving on some third round player or whatever. So this is refreshing. This is going to be fun, I think.
Yeah, I'm really pumped about it. I love draft work, and I had a kid last year, my second kid, so I didn't get to do a lot of it. So I'm happy to get back in and do this. But Derek, when talking about quarterbacks, it felt like we had this huge pendulum swing. Probably Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes caused it, where they both come into the league as prospects who weren't really defined as ready to go prospects. Josh Allen's accuracy issues were really very well documented at Wyoming, but they were lighting the ball up down the field. And this was before the shift to a lot more too high and all of that. And then there was this pendulum swing where it's like, well, now we just got to take shots on quarterback with tools. That's it. Like, that's all that matters is tools. We can coach the rest. And we saw a lot of really bad prospects getting hyped up because of that. And now it seems like the pendulum's coming back a little bit. But let's just start with arm talent then. Like, that's where it all begins. You know, that's why people fell in love with Allen. That's why people fell in love with Mahomes. That's why people hyped up Malik Willis coming out of Liberty. That's, you know, that's how we hype up a lot of really bad quarterbacks, is because they've got big arms. So arm talent is a pretty nebulous term. People define it all different ways. I don't define it as just straight up velocity, and I know you don't either. So give your thesis of what you believe arm talent to be.
Yeah, I mean, there's like probably five or whatever different categories you could really truly break arm talent into. But to me, like the very simple like one liner for it is like, how fast can you throw the ball while putting arc on the ball? And from how many platforms can you do it from? Because an example, like, so in this class, Michael Penix, he can throw the ball very hard. He can't really put touch on the ball and put arc on the ball, and he can't do it from very many different platforms. Caleb, however, probably throws the ball about as hard as Michael Penix does, but the arc and control that he can put on the ball is immaculate. The different arm angles that he can get to, the different platforms that he can access that arm talent from, is in a completely different stratosphere. And so while they both throw the ball, like you said, it's not just velocity. Like, they can both throw the ball very, very hard, but everything else that they can do with their arm is completely different, in the case of Caleb specifically. So that to me is like, yeah, arm talent is just how hard can you throw the ball while still controlling it, and from how many different platforms can you do it from?
Yeah, I think another case in this class, this past class specifically, would be JJ McCarthy. Like, right, like JJ McCarthy, yep, can throw heaters all day. Like, he can throw the 100-mile-an-hour fastball, but when it comes to trying to throw the changeup, when it comes to throwing anything with touch or trying to place it, that's where it kind of gets dicey for a guy like JJ as well. Like, yeah, we know he's got the arm talent, but the ability to layer a throw, the ability to throw with touch wasn't always there. And I go back to, you know, I cover the Browns as well. So like, that's what I'm most familiar with. I'm talking about quarterback play as well. It's probably Baker Mayfield as well. And I'm just like, I have like PTSD from the 2021 season where he's like, there's like guys running shallow crosses and he's throwing 80-mile-an-hour fastballs like right at them as they're like running shallow crosses. And it's like, buddy, just put some touch on the football. So just understanding arm talent as not always just how hard you could throw it, but again, platforms, the arm angles to manipulate throwing windows. And I think another point of emphasis might be, I think people tend to be like, oh, you don't think this guy's arm talent, watch how far he can throw it. And it's like,
NFL quarterback, you can throw the ball very far. They all can do it, except for maybe Tua Tagovailoa, but that's not the point. Like, almost all of those guys, if they wanted to, could throw the ball 65 yards. It's a matter of how fast it gets there and how well they can control it, which is I think the point you're making. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Yeah, or in Joe Milton's case, how far can you throw an orange? Right. But yeah, so then let's pivot then. I think we got a pretty good working definition of arm talent. I want to talk about accuracy a little bit. And again, you and I both chart quarterback accuracy. And again, it's good to have this conversation because I think accuracy can also be a nebulous term. Like, how do we define accuracy? Are there certain contexts that change what kind of ball placement is acceptable? Like for me, like not all accuracy is created equal. Like if a guy's running a stick route or like a stop route 5 yards out against soft zone and the ball's not right on him, like that's fine. Like he hit a layup. I don't care how hit the layup. But if that guy's running the same route, but there's a guy like outside leverage and that ball's thrown towards the leverage, like then no, that's not a good ball. Like, you know, so I think there's a lot of context that change. Same with a deep ball. Like if you got a busted coverage, just put the ball out there and let the guy catch it. Like, but if you got a corner running with him, yeah, I want to see you can put the ball exactly where it needs to be. So I think, again, people will post clips of a wide open receiver and be like, well, the receiver had to slow down to catch this ball. Like, yeah, the quarterback's throwing the ball into a pond. Like he doesn't have to, you know? So for you, when you're charting accuracy, kind of how do you define it and what counts as acceptable? What kind of contexts do you recognize that might change how you would say, yes, that ball's on target. No, that ball's not on target.
Yeah, I think the general framework, and I mean, this is going to sound very simple, is like, are you putting the ball in a spot that is away from the defense and does not strain your receiver to go get the ball? That is like the general framework. Like, again, if you're throwing just, I don't know, like you said, a stick route and you're throwing it into like where it's technically within your receiver's frame, but you're throwing it into the leverage. Okay, that's a bad ball. Like it's stuff like that. So I think that's something to keep in mind. Whereas like, yeah, to your point, if you're just throwing a go ball and he has six steps on the corner, it's okay if he slows down a little bit. Like, not every go ball has to be perfect, hit him in stride, it's a touchdown. Like, that's just not how the sport works. This is not how the game works. So I'm not that worried about that. Where accuracy gets interesting is when, kind of like you said, guys are having to throw against leverage or they're having to throw into tight windows. And you see this from the best NFL quarterbacks, where like the best quarterbacks are willing to make throws that don't look accurate because they're throwing into like keyholes. Lamar Jackson is really good at this. Matthew Stafford is really good at this. Obviously, Patrick Mahomes is very good at this, where he's just willing to make throws that aren't really open, but they make them open by where they place them. Whether that's, you know, like a safety is pinning down on a dig route, and so he throws it at his guy's ankles, and it's like, okay, that looks inaccurate, but if he leaves that head height, his receiver's head gets taken off. Or sometimes, you know, you'll see with like, if like a Mike in like Tampa 2 is running up the pole with the tight end up a seam, a good quarterback will know how to like place that back shoulder so his tight end can go back and get it, and it looks like, oh, the tight end has to now go around his back and do this whole 360 to catch the ball. But it's like, okay, well, if he leaves it in front of him and the backer knows where the ball is going to be, then he can just put a hand up and fight the ball. But if you put it on the backside where the tight end gets to reach around and the mic doesn't really get a chance to do that, that's actually fantastic placement, even though it looks a little off. So I think accuracy is like, you can start with the framework of just keep it away from the defense, make it easy for your guy. But there are certain throws that require the receiver to go straight for the ball. And that's okay if the quarterback puts it there. In fact, that's ideal. We have to remember, the guys who catch the ball, they get paid too. Make a play. Like, the quarterback can't be doing everything. Like, it's okay that the receiver has to do some part of this. So,
yeah, I like that definition a lot. I like working with that quite a bit. Moving on to, I think you know it when you see it, but like breaking it down to the minute details of quarterback mechanics can get really nitpicky and can get you almost looking really stupid if you try to talk about it on a public app or like in an article or something like that, of breaking down like, oh, actually he's not driving through his hips, or no, his, you know, the way he's firing his arms, like he's not drawing power, you know, so you can get, yeah, it can get really nitpicky. So like when you're watching a quarterback, like I'm trying to think of a good way to see this. Like Anthony Richardson, you know, he's not mechanically all there from the state of Florida, his lower half, whatever. But when you watch him throw the football, it's pretty evident that that dude's driving through, like, and he's getting the ball out fast. Like, I'm still trying to figure out what I'm trying to frame a question here, but like when you're watching for specifically what's coachable versus what's not, and what a quarterback has something that's coachable versus not coachable, what would you say are kind of the most coachable things? And again, like a case like Anthony Richardson, where he's still really raw, but you can really see it, versus maybe Bo Nix is a good example, where like, that's a quarterback who's probably hit a ceiling. Is there anything else you can coach out of that guy? Kind of how do you parse those things out?
Yeah. I mean, to me, the non-coachables are like arm talent. I mean, like, there are certain cases where some guys can add a little bit of velocity. Like, I think we actually saw this with Deshaun Watson. He came out of Clemson. He went from like B minus arm strength to like B plus, which is not anything crazy, but like you can add a little bit of velocity. But for the most part, arm talent is arm talent is arm talent. And that's not really something that's ever going to change, especially for, like you mentioned, older guys like Bo Nix. He's kind of is what he is, man. He's 24 years old. He's probably maxed out there. Athleticism is obviously another one. Like, you kind of just are the athlete that you are. The other two like non-physical things that I think are pretty uncoachable are creativity as a player. Like, I think you either have that instinct to be a gamer and go do something insane, or you don't. And that was kind of the conversation, I think, this year with Michael Penix, was, you know, when you watch him at Washington, it's like, okay, well, he doesn't really create outside the pocket ever. He's never looking to scramble. Even within the pocket, he's not all that creative in terms of the arm slots that he's looking for. And then he goes to his pro day and runs like a 4.5, and people are like, see, he could go do some of the creative stuff. And it's like, no, like, just, yeah. Because, yeah, exactly. Just because he has the means to do it does not mean you can like get him mentally to go do that stuff. Like, you're either a guy who's very willing to go break structure and do all that stuff, or you're not. And so I'd much rather have, this class is a great example. I'd much rather have the Calebs and the Drake Mays who have that mentality. And it's like, all right, we're going to slow you down a little bit. When we get to the NFL, I think it's harder to take you know, like a Michael Penix, and like get him to be like, hey man, we need you to go make a superhero play five times a game. I think that's just hard to do. The other thing I think is toughness. Like, that's obviously like kind of a very nebulous term and like kind of a subjective thing. And, you know, plays that, you know, certain people might view it in different ways, but like, I think having the ability to be tough and hang in certain pockets like that, again, is also kind of innate. I think there are certain cases where really veteran players can learn to get better at this. Like, I actually think Kirk has gotten better at being tough in the pocket, like especially compared to his early days in Washington. Like, he used to be a guy who wears like zero ability to play under pressure, but he kind of stuck around for long enough that eventually he learned it. But I don't think it's like one of those things that, you know, 2-3 years into the league you figure out. This is very much like a long process for him. So I think for the most part that's kind of an innate thing. Outside of these really rare cases like Kirk Cousins, the stuff that is teachable, I think footwork is very teachable. Mm-hmm. Like, look at all of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. Patrick Mahomes, I think his footwork stuff was overstated at Texas Tech, like the footwork issues that he had, but they were still kind of there and he was a little bit sloppy. He's as clean as anybody in the league now. Josh Allen, some of the worst footwork I've ever seen for a college prospect. He's perfectly fine now. Lamar Jackson used to have a really, really narrow base at Louisville. And he still is on the narrower side, but he's a lot more fluid and more stable and more like wide than now than he ever was coming out of college. So like the footwork stuff, I think, is extremely fixable. So like that, I'm not all that worried about, especially like you have to consider coming from a lot of these offenses, especially the guys that are in like these BS air raids. They're not taught like 1 to 2 to 3 crisp footwork. It's like, hey, man, just get to the throw however you can get to the throw. And so I think that's definitely something to keep in mind. And then I'll kind of lump, like, I think pre-snap stuff you can learn, like protections, IDing blitzes, all that sort of stuff. Like, I do like when my prospects already have that at 20, 21 years old. But I do think that, like, if you start for 5 years in the NFL, at a certain point, you're going to kind of figure it out, at least to a competent level. And then decision making, which I don't think that is the same as processing speed. And I think Justin Fields is actually a good example of this. I don't think Justin Fields is a bad decision maker. Like, he doesn't really put the ball in harm's way all that much. And you don't see him make that many egregious decisions. It's just that the speed in which he's seeing things is not fast enough. So he can't get to the right decision fast enough and often enough, which is why you see him just like, he'll hold the ball and then he'll just leave the pocket. Like, he's not making egregious errors. It's just that he's, not seeing things fast enough. So like, processing speed is probably harder to teach, but the decision making aspect of like, hey, don't throw the ball at defenders and these are the right throws you're supposed to make, that I think is more teachable.
I love it. So I just want to hit on a little bit. You mentioned footwork. Again, it can get really, really nitty gritty if you start breaking down like, no, it should actually be this, 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 and this when we're looking at mechanics, we're looking at footwork. But just give like maybe three pillars of what you're looking for when you're looking at like quarterback speed.
Oh man. I mean, I do think it kind of depends on the player. I think generally the first thing is just like, are you on time? And that can look very different for very different players. Like, I think Tom Brady's footwork looks entirely different from Lamar Jackson's in terms of the way that they drop back, but they actually both play with kind of exceptional timing in the quick game. It's just that Lamar plays very differently. So I think really it doesn't matter so much like how you're getting there, just so long as you are on time and you're able to get to the right throws, that sort of thing. The other thing that I would say about footwork is you see this a lot with, okay, so Mitch Trubisky had this problem, JJ McCarthy has this problem, where guys will be really, really loose with their front foot and they will swing it way too far forward, or like far, what's the word I'm looking for? Wide of their target. That's the biggest issue. Okay. When guys bring their front foot like wide of their target. This is why you see the Mitch Trubisky and JJ McCarthy can't throw left thing. It's because when they go 1-2-3 and turn left to throw like, I don't know, a 12-yard out or whatever, they're swinging their foot so far to the left that they're almost like parallel to the line of scrimmage, which is never where you want to be, because then you're opening your shoulders way too far from your target and you want your shoulder to be at the target that you're throwing at so you can get like actual snap and rotation. If you're too wide, how are you ever supposed to get snap and rotation? Like, right. You could even think like a golf swing is the same way. If you're like already opening your shoulders past the ball, like, you're never going to get the snap that you want. So I think those are probably just the two biggest things. I will say I've honestly come off of like footwork being that important. Like I said, you can look at Lamar, like Lamar's footwork is kind of bizarre, but he's always in the right spot and he's always stable. So it's like, I don't really care how it looks as long as you can get there. It obviously looks nice when you are the Dak Prescott's and the Joe Burrow's, where everything is so crisp, like 1, 2, 3, boom. They know how to like, what I will say, and this is like the 401 level footwork stuff, guys like Dak and Joe Burrow are so good at like, as soon as their back foot hits, they are already swinging their front foot open to the target. Like, it doesn't have to be like, okay, I hit the back of my drop, then I reset both of my feet, and then I make the throw. No, they like hit the back foot and it instantly transition it into making the throw. Like, there's a kind of seamlessness to it. But again, that's like 401 stuff. And if you don't do that, I'm not like that pressed about it.
Right. I love it. And then you mentioned evaluating eyes and process a little bit. I think JT O'Sullivan has probably the best resource I've ever seen when going through of like the mind of a quarterback. It looks like a game of life board, honestly, but it like breaks down through pre-snap to middle of the play to post-snap. And it like step-by-step, what do you look for? And I think it's a really great resource. So that's what I tend to use. And again, a lot of it comes down to one, we don't know what they're coached in terms of progressions. It helps knowing route concepts, passing concepts to know like, oh, in the version of mesh that I know, this is where I would anticipate his eyes need to go than where his eyes needs to go. But like, that's not always the case based on how guys are coached. So like when you're looking at, again, decision-making, first read, second read, third read, is the quarterback getting his eyes where it needs to be? Kind of what mental checklist are you using?
I mean, the pre-snap stuff, I think in almost any offense, even some of these BS college ones, like pre-snap is fairly like standardized across the board in the sense of like, okay, does this guy understand what his protection is doing for him? Which some guys don't. Is he setting the protection at all? You'll see this, especially in college. You can tell which guys are given the authority to do that. Like Drake May was given the authority to do that. Michael Pratt, even though he's not like a great prospect, was given the authority to do that. Whereas like you see in a lot of college offenses, guys just aren't given the authority to do that. So I do think that that's something to keep in mind. And then I think guys understanding where and when blitzes are coming from, that again, no matter the offense that you're playing in, that is something you can see just based on like, how is the safety capping a slot receiver? Like, okay, like how are they aligned their front? Like, are they in something weird that looks like it should be a blitz front? Is this something they typically drop guys out of? Like, so just stuff like that. I think no matter the offense, you can always standardize. And then like your man zone indicators, like, the best offenses will give you a little bit of help with like motions and stuff. I think we saw this a lot with Michigan and JJ McCarthy. They did a really good job of making that easy for him. But I think just checking your man and zone indicators are usually a pretty easy spot to start. So I think a lot of the pre-snap stuff, even with some of the BS college offenses, are actually pretty easy to see in almost any prospect. The post-snap stuff is a lot harder because a lot of these offenses are, it's just nonsense. Like even look at like UNC with Drake May, like it's what they're doing is not professional stuff at all. It's complete like high school area type stuff. But then even if you look at offenses that seem NFL like I've brought this up with Washington and Michael Penix, it seems like an NFL offense, right? Because like it's like vertical and like they're like, okay, they're fiving the concept. They're throwing like dig routes and these out routes. And it's like, oh, they do some NFL stuff. It's like, yeah, man, an NFL offense will run 5-step gun vertical like 4 or 5 times a game, but it's not going to be the whole offense the way that it was at Washington. So like even though it's kind of NFL-ish, it's really like only a very minute part of it, and so I think even that still makes it kind of difficult to operate post-snap. So honestly, all I like to see from guys post-snap is like, even if like you said, we don't understand what they're being taught to do, I do think actually watching NFL film, it's because it's all more standardized, it's a little bit easier. But with college guys, it's more just like, can I at least understand what you were trying to do? Like, I might not immediately be able to, like, it might seem weird at first, but if I can at least like talk myself into a way of understanding what you were trying to do and you have a consistent process, then fine, I can probably live with it.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense, especially because a ton of the top quarterback prospects, like USC, drives me crazy. It's all just like RPO stick, and it's just like, this is garbage. This is nonsense. Like, I don't, Like I'm reading a book, but it's like a, like the children's hardback, like every page is cardboard kind of book. Like it's like, so that's what I feel like I always struggle the most is like, and I've come to this with wide receivers too, is like Cedric Tillman, Jalin Hyatt are a good example from last year. Like, how are you going to be able to understand an NFL playbook? You have never had to run a choice route in your life. You've never, you're running nines and eights and twos, and that's it. Like, that's all we're talking about here. So, but quarterback is, I think with Drake May is a good example. Like, I love Drake. I know you love Drake. And you can see what he's doing post-snap, but like, there's always that in the back of my mind. Like, but how is he going to learn a playbook that's like four or five times the size of the one he's running in college? Does that ever like worry you at all? Like when you're talking about a guy like Drake May?
Honestly, no. And I'm like kind of past that. I used to very much, I would say like even probably like three years ago, or even probably Desmond Ridder was the last one where I was like, I need to see guys do the NFL stuff in college. And then at a certain point, it's like, even like I just said with Washington, even the stuff that seems NFL like, it's really just not. And like at a, like almost everything that these guys are doing in college is just not NFL like.
Okay.
And to me, I think it becomes more valuable to just see like how fast are they processing things and can they make throws that will be in an NFL playbook, which to me, May is a great example of that. Mm-hmm. I think he processes and sees and makes decisions very quickly, and he's very willing to make the hard throws that are going to pop up in the NFL, you know, throwing over the middle, throwing into tight windows, that sort of stuff. And so I'm more okay now than I think a couple of years ago at just betting on the kind of clay that you can mold, if that makes sense, than having to necessarily see like the NFL stuff in college. I will say, if you have both, like if you have all that, the clay type stuff, and you're doing NFL stuff in college, like the biggest example of this was Lamar, dude. Lamar was running like the closest thing I've probably seen to an NFL passing offense in college. And also he was like, it like just incredibly accurate. Like his velocity was insane. His pocket management was insane. That to me was like, okay, he checks both boxes. He's good. I think you just don't get to see a lot of the NFL offense in college. So unless they are running, I will say, if you're too far into the BS offense, like the Tennessee offense, then I'm like, okay, this is completely non-starter. But for most cases, you will at least see enough like NFL-ish throws that I'm like, okay, they can figure it out if they have enough time.
Okay. It's good to know. That's good. A good differentiation. So Derek, again, appreciate your time. Last thing here. Cause I know we hit on something that you value, that we haven't hit on something you value really, really highly. So this is a good time to hit on that. I want you to rank a bunch of different traits, I guess, aspects of playing quarterback: arm talent, upper body, lower body mechanics. You can lump those into just mechanics if you want to, accuracy, pocket presence and sack avoidance, and then like lower half athleticism and football acumen.
Pocket presence is number one. Like that to me, if you cannot play in the pocket in the NFL, you will not play in the NFL. There are very, very few exceptions. And there are a couple of guys that have had success without great pocket presence. Like Jalen Hurts, I don't think has very good pocket presence. But when you're playing behind the best offensive line in football and you have two receivers you can constantly just throw it up to, and you're a really good athlete, it's like, okay, you have enough here that you can make up for it. Tua, I don't think has very good pocket presence, but they just completely circumvent that by getting the ball out in a half a second. So it doesn't matter. So there are cases where you can get around it. But I think if you look at all the best quarterbacks in the league, Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, Justin Herbert, even Lamar Jackson, like these are guys who can throw from tight pockets, can maneuver tight pockets, and understand how to get themselves out of trouble. So that to me is like number one, gotta have it. It's why I love Drake and Caleb. Like they are very much who can make tight, tough throws in tight pockets, and they're not scared to do it. The second one, which is a very close second, is arm talent. Like you got to be able to make all the throws.
Yeah.
You just got to have it. And like part of being able to make tough throws from tight pockets is having that ability to just contort your body to make it do whatever is necessary to get the ball out. And that, like we talked about at the top of the show, that counts as arm talent. So those to me are like the two almost in their own category. And then I think there's a tier break. And then I think the next, like, I would kind of lump the next three together. And which one is most important kind of just depends on the type of quarterback they are, if that makes sense. But I think to me, it's athleticism, accuracy, and then like their pre-snap acumen type stuff. And the reason I say that it's like different depending on the quarterback, like, so a guy like Joe Burrow, when he came out of college, he was like 23, 24 years old. The pre-snap acumen stuff to me is a lot more important for a player like that because he's older. So it's like, yeah, man, you better have it. Like, you better be able to figure this stuff out. Whereas like when I watch a guy like JJ McCarthy, I'm going to a little bit more value just his athletic tools and some of the rawness because it's like, okay, you just haven't played as much football. You show these flashes of being able to do pre-snap stuff and understanding that, but like, I'm more okay that you're not up to the 401 level stuff yet because you're just not that old. You haven't played that much football. So those three, I think it kind of just a little bit depends on the prospect. And then I would say upper half mechanics, I think are definitely a lot more important than lower half mechanics because I think like your arm slot and stuff, like you just throw how you throw. You know, people are going to bring up the Aaron Rodgers thing every now and then, but it's like he's the exception that proves the rule. There are so few quarterbacks who have changed the way that they throw with their upper body. Whereas I think, you know, like we talked about a little bit earlier, you look at footwork, almost all of the best quarterbacks in the league have changed their footwork from what they were in college. And there are very few that haven't. And the few that haven't, like Joe Burrow, he walked into the league with incredible footwork. So he just didn't need to change anything. So I think that would kind of be like the general ordering of those traits for me.
I love it. Again, thank you so much, Derek, for your time. Derek, QB Class on Twitter. Why don't you tell everybody kind of the work you're doing, where they can find you? Yeah.
Yeah. So if you guys are still bugging for draft stuff, you can go back and read all my reports from this last class over at Bleacher Report. I'll also be doing a couple of feature pieces for them over the summer. And then over at Reception Perception, I will be doing NFL quarterback charting for basically every quarterback that started last year and is also supposed to start again this year. So I probably won't get to like the Desmond Ridders because he's going to be a backup now. But pretty much everybody that's going to start again, I will be charting. So it'll be 25 or so quarterbacks. So definitely look forward to that.
I think people will be really disappointed that they won't be able to see some PJ Walker charts, but I think we'll live. All right, Derek, thank you so much. I do appreciate your time.